Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Tuesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. on WGXE Acre 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better. Today's guest is Jesse Berube. Jesse is 29 years old and grew up in Putnam Station, New York, a small town in the Adirondack Mountains. He lived on about 1,000 acres of farmland and woods in between Lake George and Lake Champlain with his mother, father, and three brothers. His family always tried to find ways to live off of the land, eating mainly venison, heating their house only by wood, and making maple syrup. At a young age, Jesse became involved in the sport of distance running, which he competed in high school, college, and 1 year professionally. After college, Jesse began his career as a teacher in Windham, New York, where he began to coach cross country and track and field. At the same time, Jesse began to become interested in the sport of rabbit hunting and training hunting dogs, which became the basis for his popular YouTube channel, Beagle Boys Rabbit Hunting. Recently, Jesse bought a house in the Catskill Mountains, where he and his wife are expecting their first child. Jesse, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys.
Now, Jesse, running.
Yes.
Professional running.
Yeah.
How does one become a professional runner?
Well, I started my professional career and at the end of college. I actually stayed for 5 years in college, and I ran out of eligibility. And
no pun intended.
Yeah. And one of the coaches who was starting up this professional team, he was trying to recruit some runners, and he came across my name, and he asked me if I would join the team, and I said yes. So I got hooked in with that.
Now, does it when someone is professional, mm-hmm. and a professional athlete, does that involve getting sponsorship and running for money?
Yep. Well, I was kind of like the walk-on of the team, so I got a uniform, but it was sponsored through Nike. And I would travel from Geneseo to Syracuse. That's where the team was from. And I would go out there and train, maybe every other day or two times a week. And, I got hooked in that way. But, don't get me wrong, training with these guys and in the sport of running, when you're a professional, you're just scraping by. So,
right.
No one's getting rich.
Well, it's like a lot of things, isn't it? You see a lot of these when you watch the TV in a sport or an activity, you're seeing the cream of the crop.
Oh, yeah.
So, you see these high-end athletes that are running and they're making millions and all that. That's the 1%, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Most of these, pretty much everybody I was running with is just, scraping by paycheck to paycheck. So, holding on to that dream.
Yeah. It was somebody I heard, the Summer Olympics were this past summer, right? And some celebrity like Alec Baldwin said, just for a frame of reference, an average person should perform in every event. Because you see these people on TV and it's like, okay, they're running fast. What's the big deal? But if you compare it to a normal person, it's like, oh my gosh, they're superhuman.
Yeah.
Get them a cape.
How long is your work today? 10 seconds.
Yeah.
I know. It's high pressure though.
I think I can handle it. 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
About 9.59 seconds.
Yeah. What was it like growing up on 1,000 acres of farmland?
It was great. I loved it. I think most people who would have my life would say, "Oh my gosh, there's nothing to do." But it's just a different.
On the contrary,
it's a different lifestyle. So you gotta think of things to do, on your land. So what are you gonna do in the field? What are you gonna do in the woods? It was awesome. I loved it. I love wide open spaces. We used the woods to run in, to train in. We were always out in the woods constantly, making forts, all of that. And then I went to college, and it was kind of more of like a city, type area. And I was like, oh my gosh, what do I do now? I have no woods,
I think
that must have been an adjustment, though.
Oh yeah. You just find different things to do.
Well, I think for some perspective here, Jesse, you went to Geneseo.
Yes.
And you're referring to that as a city.
Yes.
So that also, if anyone understands that Geneseo is a profoundly rural area, it shows just how rural it was where Jesse was growing up.
Oh, yes.
and another thing I need to emphasize on behalf of the three of us, we are recording for the first time outside tonight.
An outdoor, beautiful...
Today.
Catskill evening out on the deck, surrounded by trees and the sound of birds and a little kitty named Ruby, who's adorable.
Yes, my wee cat.
Mm.
She's made an appearance in previous shows.
She has. You sometimes can hear her in the back. Actually, on Larry Gambin's show, you could hear her bringing... And did she begin chasing a chipmunk or something?
Yeah, it was Thunderdome.
Yeah.
In Thunderdome in the living room.
Beyond the Thunderdome. Now, Jesse, you moved to Wyndham recently.
Yeah. We've been here for about 6 years now. So after college, you know, I ran professionally for about a year there, and I was still taking college classes, and then I graduated, and I decided, you know, I better start getting a job, and I applied to be a teacher just about everywhere around the state, and I landed one here. So then, you know, my wife and I relocated in the Catskill Mountains, which was great because it was, you know, very much like home. I couldn't really convince many of my relatives of that because, remember, for Northerners, anything Albany and below, that's just New York City. So that's just
you know,
a city.
If you get, say, let's say a snowstorm in Wyndham and it's like 6 inches,
yeah,
what's it likely to be in the Adirondacks?
Well, you know, interesting. My family actually lives right down by the Champlain Valley in Lake George. So it's only 300 feet in elevation, whereas, you know, here in the Adirondacks, our house now is 2,000 feet. So actually the weather...
Wyndham.
Wyndham. It's actually very, very similar to Wyndham. And I, you know, I call my parents and I say, oh, how much you got? And they usually have the same exact temperature, same exact, you know, snow.
Yeah.
So if you're up in the mountains in the Adirondacks, different story.
I mean, I said to you a while ago today that when we first met up, that my first location when I first came to America, I was working in a summer camp as a young man. It was 1993, and it was in the Adirondacks, and it was Long Lake, I think it was, and beautiful.
Oh yeah, I'm up there usually every other weekend. I'm up there at least in Long Lake. So I take I got three beagles, and we go up to Long Lake. My dad and I and my uncle, and we actually hunt snowshoe hare. So I'm up there all the time.
Right.
Could be negative 10, negative 15. I'm still out there all day.
Does the temperature, do you find, is there anything that gets you in the mood for hunting?
You know, if there's nice fresh powder, that's perfect because I want to see, you know, tracks in the snow. Mm-hmm. So that's like awesome.
Would you listen to Glenn Miller's In the Mood before you would go hunting?
You know, to tell you the truth, no, not really. Glenn Miller, I put down a variety of different songs that I like to listen to because...
Would you ever go to the Adirondacks in a train? You know, say like a crazy train?
Oh, in a crazy train. Yes.
Yeah, Dandy, that's the next one.
So in a lot of my videos, I feature, you know, a lot of classic rock songs, Ozzy Osbourne type things, you know, and that's generally where my viewers, you know, most of them what they like to listen to. But yeah, I listen to...
Say what you want here because we're editing this wee bit. So.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the classic rock stuff, I that's the sort of stuff I usually listen to if we're, you know, out there rabbit hunting. Usually when I'm in the car, you know, that's where, you know, my wife and I, we always play like the hip hop and hits a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, Glenn Miller, you know, we're eating dinner. I just pop that on, and that's usually what we listen to.
Yeah, that's good dinner. It is good dinner music. Yeah. I like the Frank Sinatra Pandora Station.
Yeah, I do like a little bit of jazz sometimes when I'm cooking. I'm cooking and I'm having a beer.
Maybe
listen to a bit of jazz. You know, as Mike was saying, I find I like to listen to like Frank Sinatra around about Christmassy time.
Yeah.
For some reason, you know, but yeah. But the music now is far more accessible because of the computer technology that we have. What I mean is that, you know, the Alexa and stuff like that. You could be sitting, you could go, you know what, I want to hear about Alexa, play. Or you could just press a button or you could verbalize something and it plays. Years ago, it would be, you get up, pick up the album, take it out and change the album and stuff, so you're less likely to do it. But maybe it's just because I'm getting old. But,
well, you are getting old. I don't think it has anything to do with it, though. You know, I did some reading about Glenn Miller. He actually volunteered for the U.S. Army during World War II, and he was a musician in the Army and had a band to entertain the troops, and he actually crashed in the English Channel and was lost.
Wow, I never knew. Yeah. But these are the songs that won the Great War.
In the Mood by Glenn Miller. Good choice, Jesse. That is a good song. Very famous song, obviously.
Jesse, your next, your first item that you're going to bring on your weekend getaway to the Catskills is a rain jacket. Why a rain jacket?
Why? Because it's always raining.
This year it is.
Oh, yeah.
May was something else, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know.
It was so much rain. I actually laid new grass at my house in Poughkeepsie, and it was manna from heaven. Myself and Julia, my girlfriend, were besotting making sure the grass was wet and laid. And every time it rained in the workout, it was like, oh, it's raining again. I was like, yes, yes.
Grow, my little ones, grow. Have you guys seen the movie Unbreakable?
I have not.
It's with Bruce Willis, Samuel L. Jackson. It's an awesome M. Night Shyamalan take on what a real life superhero would be like. And
I remember the movie, but I've not seen it. But
he wears a rain poncho,
right?
But it's a pretty good movie. I think they're going to make a sequel.
Was it called
Breakable? I don't know. Unbreakable too.
Glued back together.
But I did some reading about raincoats, and the history is really fascinating. The Inuit, while hunting by spear on the open ocean from kayaks, would dress in seal and whale intestines, and being like intestinal membranes, they're made to allow the transfer of fluids and stuff in one direction but not the other. I guess. So they would be like ultra thin, ultra light, transparent, and they would just knit these things together, and it would be like this great waterproof coat.
Oh, yes. And that's what I had in mind.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they're not selling this garment in Gander Mountain or whatever.
Gigantic whale bladder.
Ew.
And then, now after that, in South America, people used tree rubber in their clothing for waterproofing. In China and Europe, grass and leaves were woven together, animal furs were used, and waxed cotton gear was developed in Scotland during the 1800s.
The Macintosh.
That was his name, Charles Macintosh. How'd you know that?
Because that's what they're called in Scotland, the Macs.
Macs.
Yeah, your Mac. Get your Mac on.
And that he was a Scottish chemist, I think, that helped to innovate waterproof technology that ended up leading to the Gore-Tex that we have today, which is like a three-layered membrane that allows water to go one direction but not the other.
Yeah.
So really fascinating.
There's a lot of Scottish people. I'm not just plugging Scottville, I am. And there's a lot of people for example, blacktop was invented by a Scotsman.
Yeah.
Tarmacadam. It's called tarmac.
I've heard tarmac so many times, but I didn't know it was...
Tarmac Adam. His name is McAdam. Tiles. I forget the name of the guy who made the tiles. But a lot, obviously, penicillin and the light bulb and television and...
Calculus.
Mm.
What's going on in Scotland?
Heart disease.
They've given us a lot.
There's some bad that goes with all the good. Kilts. Now, your next song, Jesse, what is it, Andy?
It's Crazy Train by who?
Ozzy Osbourne.
Now, that's it's kind of chalk and cheese, isn't it? You've got Glenn Miller on one hand and Ozzy Osbourne on the next. So,
well, isn't he from Great Britain?
Yeah, he's actually from a place called Aston in Birmingham, which is Birmingham is the second biggest city in Britain. And it's about 100 miles from London.
Oh, okay.
Birmingham. So that's where he's from. Obviously a member of which band was it?
Black Sabbath,
Sabbath. And he obviously left Black Sabbath and went on his own merry way. Well, right. I think he was shoved.
Boy, well, hey, talk about skunks doing LSD and drugs and stuff. There was a skunk that did some drugs.
Yeah, I mean, Ozzy, guys in the band would say that we all did it. We all hit the drugs and the booze really hard, but when we were all unconscious, Ozzy was still standing, and he sort of did more than the others and was prone to some eccentric acts of peculiar behaviour,
Biting the head off of a bat.
I think what the story with that was is that somebody threw this bat on, he thought it was a fake bat, and he actually bit it off just as a part of a gag, part of the concert. And it turns out it was a real bat. But I think it was dead anyway. I don't think it was a real one.
But what kind of fan does that?
Yeah, I know.
But apparently he was also, he went in to see some record executives, and it was all kind of stinted in the meeting, and he decided to go in off his tree with alcohol and drugs, nude, and he was like dancing on the tables and stuff. But
because he's Ozzy Osbourne, they're like,
but you know what?
Oh, right.
The guy has sold with Black Sabbath and on his own about 100 million records.
Jeez.
And him and his wife are worth about £100 million. So the guy, he did something right.
Yeah.
Do you know that song? It's actually about the Cold War.
What?
Yeah, it was actually about the fear of annihilation in the Cold War. All aboard!
We'll
That was John Michael Osborne, or Ozzy as we know him. Fantastic song, Crazy Train, love it. Jesse, we never asked you, why did you pick that song?
So that's, you know, it's always been a favorite of mine. You know, when I was running, I listened to that one. And then I've also used it on my Beagle videos quite often. So, you know, in high school, actually, I listened to mostly classic rock, and that was one of my favorites.
You know, I've spent some time with distance runners over the years, college roommates, my buddy Eric, and talking to you. And I think you have to be a little crazy to do the workouts that you guys do.
Oh, definitely. There was a point in my life where I went 2 whole years without taking a single day off, and that includes Christmas, you know, All the holidays, summertime, weekends.
When you running,
yeah, I ran every day.
So, how far would you run every day?
Oh, geez, well, you know, it depends. If I went for a long run, and this is high school. I'd run up to 18 miles in high school.
Wow.
When I got, you know, professionally and in college, I'd run sometimes 25, 24 miles in a single, you know, single day.
Wow. I think I'm doing well running 6 miles 3 times a week.
Which is really impressive. You know, 6-7 miles a day, that's, you know, a lot of people can't walk a mile, let alone run 6 or 7. So you were running 24 miles a day. Not in high school or college?
College, I was doing that. But in high school, I was running up to 18 miles. Usually, 1 day a week would be a long run. But, you know, I was probably running around 80, anywhere from 70 to 90 miles a week. So
Yeah, I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, I mean, at this age I'm at the moment, which is 40, I'm approaching 48, and some weeks I can run up to 22, 23 miles a week. And
yeah.
I find that to be impressive, but to be running 80 miles a week is highly impressive, obviously.
Well, a marathon is 26 miles, is that right?
Yes, yeah. 26.2.
So you were doing just about that, just as a workout?
Yeah, actually.
Listening to Ozzy Osbourne, who is a massive drug and alcohol consumer.
It got me through some of those longer runs. But
he's running by people, he's like, all aboard!
There goes that crazy runner again.
Oh yeah. The whole town thought I was nuts. A lot of people, you know. Well, I was, of course. But when I was on that professional team, I was training with a lot of guys who were trying to get to the Olympic trials for the marathon. And I have to tag along or join in the workouts. And coach would say, okay, we're gonna run 25 miles right now, and that's what we do. You know, for a longer run. Some days were shorter. Some days were longer.
So at your peak, what would your time be for a marathon?
Oh, and interestingly enough, I've never run a marathon. So, towards the end of my career, though, I was running 24 to 25 miles, and I was averaging, this is an average, 5:40 a mile, 5:40
wow.
flat a mile. So usually we'd start off, you know, around just under 6 minute mile pace, so 5:50s, and then by the end on the last, you know, 10 miles or so, we would bring it down to, you know, 5:20s. So
come on now, we're at the last 10, so let's push it.
Yeah, that's back to back. So it was a lot, you know, and in the end, it was really like a part-time job. I was probably putting in, I figured, like 4 hours a day easy just to train. And, you know, that includes running, getting, you know, stretching, weight training, all that sort of stuff.
Did you ever get injured?
You know what? Compared to most people, I pretty much never did get injured until the very, very end. So my last never got injured during high school or college, which is actually pretty rare. And I was doing a lot of mileage, which, you know, doesn't happen very often. But then
you get stress fractures and
shin splints.
But
I did get injured right at the end. And it was basically I had a strained ligament kind of right in the groin area. And
not fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. I thought I had like a hernia type thing. So I had surgery in the summer. It was just just exploratory, and they couldn't find a tear or anything, so I must have strained it. And then that summer, you know, after my fifth year of college, when I came to Wyndham, I couldn't even walk. I was actually just, you know, hobbling around for the summer. And then when I came to Wyndham, they said, you know, how would you like to help out with the cross country team? So I came a little bit, and that was, I was trying to rebound. But what I ended up finding was that, you know, more rest was better. I was kind of overtraining because I was, you know, running with some guys who were training for the Olympics, and I really was not at that level. I came to Wyndham. I actually started training for the mile, and my brothers and I, actually, is coming up. I'm wicked out of shape now, though. But we always get ready for a mile. It's on the 4th of July. It's the start of the 4th of July parade in Ticonderoga, New York, my hometown. And we all run it. It's a downhill mile. And that season, right after I got injured, I, you know, came to Wyndham and started training with the team here. And I ended up, I ran a, what did I run? I ran a 4:03 mile.
Wow.
Downhill mile. Yeah, yeah.
That's insane.
So more rest actually benefited me. I was training a little bit too much.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, when I'm running overnight after work, you know, it's probably about a 9.5 minute mile.
Hey, so, that's great.
But it's you know, I'm not doing it to compete. I'm just doing it to keep fit, you know. I enjoy it.
Now, your next item, Jesse.
Oh, sorry, before we go any further, I just wanted to mention one thing about Ozzy Osbourne. I think it's important to mention it. You know, we've made mention, or I have, about his drug and alcohol, and it's you know, it's for all to read. It's not a secret. But when I first saw him, it kind of was a reemergence in the scene. Maybe at the beginning of the 21st century, and he seemed to have like a tremor and shakes and stuff, and I just assumed that it was to do with the alcohol and the drugs and all that.
Sure.
But it wasn't. And he actually thought the same. But it's actually, he realised that these tremors were actually found to be Parkinson's syndrome, a genetic condition, the symptoms of which are similar to Parkinson's disease.
Parkinson's?
No, it's called Parkinson's syndrome.
Oh, no kidding.
But very similar to Parkinson's disease.
So he was done no matter what.
So he's actually got this. That's why if you see him in the TV and you see him maybe shaking or whatever, it's because of that. It's not because of drug and alcohol. Anyway, on a lighter note, your next item is a lighter.
Why a lighter?
Well, it's very important to start fire. So I figured a lighter is it's the best way to, you know, get the fire going. You know, maybe some more traditional people would go with the flint and steel or something along those lines. But, you know, lighter, so much better.
Or what's that stuff, Mike, that we talked about?
Cotton balls with Vaseline.
Yes.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
Now, one of the first lighters was invented by a German chemist named Johann Wolfgang Dobereiner in 1823. And was often called the Dobereiner's lamp.
Wow.
So there you are.
Awesome.
Your next item, Jesse, is... Actually, it's a song. Is that, it's the next thing.
Yes,
it is.
Song.
And it's Panda by Designer.
With two eyes.
Yes, with two eyes. Very fancy.
Like a person, but the letter I instead of eyeballs.
Yeah, so I'm throwing in some modern hip hop in there, and you know, a lot of times I put this in there because a lot of times, you know, we're driving in the car, and you know, usually what I listen to is, you know, hip hop and hits. We've kind of gotten into that lately, my wife and I, ever since I moved down to the big city here in Wyndham. So one of the things I picked up from the area.
Quite ironic that when we started talking about hip hop, we heard sirens in the background.
That they are featured in a lot of hip-hop songs.
Yeah?
It's true. I have heard this.
Oh, yes.
Sirens in the background.
So what does a song mean to you then?
Oh, what does a song mean to me?
Yeah.
No clue.
So just one you like, basically.
Yeah, the hip-hop songs, I never even read too much into them.
It's that beat.
You go off the beat, the bass.
Do you know what a panda is?
No.
Mike, do you know what the panda is referring to?
I do, yes.
Could you enlighten us?
It's about a BMW X6 and how it looks like a panda bear. So it's about a car.
Yeah, black ones and white ones.
Black ones and white ones.
Like the black and yellow song by Wiz Khalifa.
Is that about a car?
Yeah, black and white. I think it was about a car. But no, it's very deceiving since there's a panda on the cover of the album.
Hmm.
A panda bear.
Yes, with a big gold chain.
Correct.
I did do some research about BMW. They originally built warplane engines, but the World War I Treaty of Versailles prohibited Germany from building more, and that's when they had to transition to automobiles.
Ah.
And it's kind of a myth that the BMW, the blue and white circle emblem, it's a myth that that's supposed to be like a propeller in the sky.
Huh.
The reading I found is that the Bavarian flag is blue and white, and so somehow they use those colors to make this little
interesting
car symbol. And pandas, boy, that is a species that is on borrowed time.
Yes.
They rely on bamboo, right? 99% of a panda's diet, bamboo, is void of nutritional value. And because it's a carnivore, it's a bear, right? It has to eat these obscene 30 pounds of bamboo a day, and it's evolved to have this really sedentary lifestyle.
Yeah, that's no good. That spells disaster.
And the females are like fertile for 3 days a year. And one rolled over and killed its offspring like a decade ago.
It's not got a lot going for it, is
no,
it?
So it's like, you know, the panda was nice. I don't want to be heartless or anything, but we're trying awful hard to keep them going, and they're not really trying to help themselves. So, yeah. Panda. Panda. Panda, panda, panda. I got in Atlanta. Choose to be in the family. Credit cards and scams. Hitting the licks in the van. Legacies. Family. Wait and see, they like a panda. Going out like a Montana. Honey killers on their hands. Legacies, family. Wait and see, panda. Pocket swoop, Danny. Selling ball, candy. Been at the macho like Randy. The chopper go out to for granted. Pull up your bandit. Hope the killers understand it. I got b****s in Atlanta. Twisted the D in the family. Credit cards and the scammers. Hitting the licks in the van. Legacy.
That was Panda by Designer with two eyes.
Now, Jesse, your next item is a knife. What kind of knife? Why are you bringing a knife?
What kind of knife? It would just be a regular lockback knife.
I don't know what that means.
Oh, wow. Okay. So a lockback knife.
A sharp one.
Yeah, a lockback knife is where you can extend it and it locks in place. So if, say, if you poke something, it's not going to come back on, down on your hand, so you can kind of like fold it up.
Sure.
But it also has that, you know, that locking ability, because, you know, a lot of your Swiss Army knives, they don't have that. And when, you know, you're a little kid and you're whittling, it can fold back on you, like it happened to me.
Ouch.
Yes.
Did you have to get stitches?
No, never got stitches. And, you know, my first instinct was like, oh, I'll go to the hose and just pour water on it and it'll fix itself. No.
I saw a cool video demonstration recently. They've created this kind of like a butterfly tape that it kind of pulls in opposite directions and closes a wound, so you don't have to get stitches.
Oh, like a compressing it, I guess.
Yeah,
or like, and then pull the skin back together.
It pulls the skin back together. Yeah,
pushes the skin back together.
It's like two pieces of tape that are woven so that when you pull on the opposite ends, they pull the skin together. It was really cool. And then so you just pull it together and then compress the tape down, and it just seals the cut. And
oh, I see that.
So,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. We'll see if it works, but saw it on Facebook or something.
Yeah.
Too bad we didn't come up with that.
I know. Oh, my gosh.
We wouldn't be here.
So you're going to use your knife to cut sausages and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. Cut sausages, you know, make spears to protect us from the wild animals, all sorts of stuff like that.
There are a lot of bear around.
Well, you know, if I was asking Mike that question, the conversation would have ended at sausages.
Well, that's what I use my knife for.
You like to pack sausages?
Well, I have this awesome Gerber blade, and I don't use it for anything that it's supposed to be used for. I just like to keep it nice and not used. what else? What kind of knife do you have, and where did you first get it? And
what kind of knife? Well, I have the whole assortment of knives. One knife in particular, I was on a hike. I was actually doing a science fair project, you know, up north. And my science fair project was to go to different lakes and test the acidity in every lake and, you know, compare it and do the little science fair type thing. Well, I was on a hike and I had to get to this pond, and it was about a mile into the woods. And, you know, stuck into a log was a, you know, lockback knife. And I found it in the log, and I've had it ever since.
Excalibur. Cool.
Yes. I pulled it right out of the log. It was sweet. So I still have that one.
King Jesse.
Oh, yeah. My dad finds knives all the time, but he always says the ones that he finds are the ones that always disappear on him again. So it's kind of like a, you know, like a traveling knife.
Passed on to the next rover.
Yeah. You know, I was doing a little reading about knives, and they think the word possibly descends from the Old Norse word nifir, which is blade. You guys ever seen an obsidian blade?
Yeah, I've seen pictures.
Like volcanic rock. Apparently, these things are profoundly sharp, like 3 nanometers thick at their edge, and smooth even when viewed under an electron microscope. Whereas you can take any sort of the best steel edge, look at it under a high-powered microscope, but even then, it's still jagged, it's still irregular. So apparently obsidian is just... And they have proposed that it be used for surgical tools.
Wow.
I always wonder where we get that K, the knife.
Yeah, I was going to look that up, and I couldn't. It's something to do with German, Germanic languages.
Yeah, they don't know how to spell over there.
I don't.
Yeah.
Canoe? Well, another item you would like to take with you is a flashlight.
Oh, yeah, Sandy. So, you know, especially when I'm usually out in the woods in the wintertime and I'm out there with the dogs, and almost always I need a flashlight because, you know, you're out there hunting and, you know, the sun goes down a little earlier in the wintertime than usual. And I'm a kind of a crazy nut, and I'll be right out there until dark. So I got to catch the dogs, and then then we might be a couple miles out in, you know, in the woods in the wintertime. And I always bring a flashlight so I can get back.
Yeah.
No. They're called torches everywhere else, right?
Really?
Yeah.
And I've always asked myself, why do Americans call them flashlights? And I found out today why. So I'm going to read this to you. Early flashlights ran on zinc carbon batteries, which could not provide a steady electric current and required periodic rest to continue functioning. Because of these early flashlights also used energy-inefficient carbon filament bulbs, resting occurred at short intervals. Consequently, they could be only used in brief flashes, hence the common North American name flashlight.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Whereas in Britain, they're called torches.
Yeah.
Huh.
Both names are kind of silly.
Yeah. I mean, so, it's not a torch.
It's not a torch.
Torch is fire. Come on.
Yeah.
Now, one interesting fact, Mike, I think you might like this, Mike. Actually, it wasn't the torch. It was something else. I think it was it the torch? Actually, the lighter. I'm going back to the lighter now. Stephen Fry,
yeah,
called the lighter one of the most important inventions in history of man.
He had a show about that.
Yeah, and the lighter was one of them.
Yeah. Oh, I believe it.
Actually, the reason I didn't read it then is because I thought it was the torch, but it's actually the lighter.
Oh yeah.
So he was a heavy smoker?
I do believe he did smoke, but yeah. I don't think he thought it was the one of the most important inventions because it helped bring people flame very quickly.
Quickly, safely, easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stephen Fry is great.
Do you know who Stephen Fry is?
No, I don't.
Mrs. Fry's son.
And that does not help me at all.
Stephen Fry is an Englishman who is a very well-read Oxford or Cambridge graduate, and he hosts a number of television programs in Britain, kind of comedian type, and he's done a lot of travelogues shows recently in North America. One of them in particular, he drove around all of the states of America in a London cab.
It's brilliant. Awesome series.
It's a really good show. So if you get a chance to go on Netflix and watch it, I think you would enjoy it.
Now, Jesse, your last song is Dust on the Bottle by David Lee Murphy. Why that song?
Well, you might be thinking at this point, why all these songs?
So, yeah, I was going to say, it's a very eclectic choice
very
of
diverse.
Songs.
Yes, yes, very diverse. So, you know, all these songs represent, you know, different phases in my life and, different areas. So if we go back to In the Mood, you know, I got that basically from my grandparents. I go to my grandparents, and they'd always be playing the big band and swing songs. And, you know, one of their favorite was, you know, In the Mood. And rightly so, very, very popular. So, you know, when we, you know, eat dinner at night, I like to play a little bit of Glenn Miller, a lot of big band and swing. You know, it kind of reminds me of those times. And, you never have to go out to eat because you're always in a restaurant. And then, Dust on the Bottle. These early 90s and late 80s country songs, prime country, is basically all I listened to middle school, you know, all the way down to, you know, when I was born. My family would always listen to country, and those are the, you know, the songs I remember. And Dust on the Bottle was, one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And then
it was one of the, one of the songs in the soundtrack of 8 Mile, the movie 8 Mile.
Mm. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, of which I've never seen. But I think it's about a guy who walks 8 Mile. I don't know. Maybe he runs 8 Mile. 5 minute miles.
Jesse's warm up.
Yeah.
Right, guys, come on. With the last 8 miles, pick it up.
I don't want to.
Yeah, and after that, the country phase, you know, when I got to middle school and high school, started running, you know, I started discovering classic rock. So I got into that, and I, you know, stuck with that for about, 8 to 10 years, college, high school, and then, eventually when I came back down to Wyndham and, came to this thriving city down here south of Albany.
Metropolis.
Yes, exactly. I started saying to myself, wow, there's this hip-hop and, hits music here. What is this? So, I like to keep everybody guessing. They ask, well, Jesse, what do you listen to? And I tell them this and that and that. And they're like, what?
Yeah, an eclectic.
Yeah, yeah.
See, I'm the same. You know, it's like, I'm not really into one particular kind of music. If something is enjoyable to listen to me, it doesn't matter what genre it's from. It's, you know, as I say, it could be jazz, could be heavy rock, you know. I mean, like Motorhead, Ace of Spades is one of my favourite songs. But equally, Willie Nelson's one of my favourite artists, you know. So, I'm in the same camp as that.
wine like nobody I know. I drop by one Friday night and said, can you help me, Creole? I got a little girl waiting on me and I want to treat her right. He said, I got what you need, son, as we step down in the cellar. He reached through the cobweb as he turned on the light. He said, there might be a little dust on the bottom, but don't let it fool you about what's inside. There might be a little dust on the bottom, but it's one of those things that gets sweeter with time. He was sitting in the porch swing as I pulled up the drive. Heart was racing as you climbed inside. You slid over there close and we drove down to the lake road. Watched the sun fade in that big red sky. I reached under the front seat and said, now here's something special. It's just been waiting for a night like tonight. Oh, there might be a little dust on the bottom.
Was Dave Lee Murphy. Dust on the Bottle. Good song, good choice. Now, Jesse, we still have a little bit of time, so could you tell us a wee bit about your maple syrup making?
Yeah, so, you know, my family has done a lot, you know, around the house using the, you know, the 1,000 acres that we have. And one of the things that we do is make maple syrup, and in a pretty unique way.
So
we don't.
What does it involve?
Oh, a lot of work, basically. But anyways, we do it very basically. What we do is we take hand drills, actually. We take hand drills and we, you know, drill about 100, 150 trees. And we have just 5-gallon buckets that we run little hoses to from the tree to the bucket.
So you just screw a hole in the tree, stick a hose in there, and fluid goes into the hose.
Correct.
Now, it's that simple.
So does this damage the tree?
A little bit. We scar it a little, but you know, they recover very simply. And you don't want to over tap your tree. And generally, we like to do it every other year so that our trees have a little time to recover. as well. But yeah, we go around. It takes a lot of work. First thing we do is we take the drills. We drill. Takes usually the whole family. We get all the buckets, all the hoses with little spigots. You tap them into the tree, and that's all it is. And then it starts dripping into the bucket.
What is it? It drips in sap?
Yeah, sap. Yeah, sap. So it's, you know, and it takes four. And then,
so what's actually happening is the tree bleeding?
Yes, basically. The tree is bleeding. It's like, yeah, if you think of it like that, it's like the blood, you know, and, you know, just like you'd see in a hospital. And then
sounds like a tree horror film.
Yeah. It sounds like they're like
the trees are screaming.
Bands of mountain people going around tapping into the... Okay, sorry to interrupt. Continue,
yeah.
Jesse.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely a tree horror story. And then after that, the real work begins, and we take the farm tractor with a, you know, a wagon behind it, and we basically got these big trash barrels, basically what you know, use for your trash. And we got about six of those can fit on the cart, and the tractor drives around where it can, but then we go throughout the woods, and we collect, you know, the buckets and 5-gallon buckets, and you take those, and you pour them into the garbage cans. And then we cart all the maple syrup, or all the sap, I should say at this point, to the sap house, which is basically just like a shed. And then we start to boil it. Now, it takes 40 gallons of sap to make 1 gallon of syrup.
Wow.
And it roughly takes, you know, my family about, I'm thinking 10 to 12 hours. It basically takes a full day to boil all that down. Now, we do it over, you know, an open fire. We have a pan and everything. You know, most people have the evaporators and the fancy equipment, but we don't. We just have a steel fireplace. We put a pan over it. We pour the sap in, and as it evaporates, you keep pouring more in, pouring more in, pouring more in. You do that all day until at the end of the night, it's, you know, very thick and sticky, and then we literally take it with gloves, big welding gloves, and we tip it into a bucket, and then we start to strain it and get it ready to put in the jars.
And do you make a lot of jars?
Yeah. My parents, I forget how many they did this year. You know, I don't do it personally anymore. I helped out a little bit.
Do you sell it?
No, we never sell it. But my parents, we, you know, if we go to somebody, you know, somebody's house, it's usually like, you know, a gift that we would give.
Right,
or, you know,
right.
Someone's birthday, we give like some maple syrup or whatever. And, you know, it's just so precious.
And what do you put it on? You put it on like...
Oh,
you
know... gee, we put it in coffee. We put it on pancakes, of course. you know, we put it on toast. We put it on cinnamon buns. Everything you
so
can
imagine.
So
how long does it last? Has it got a shelf date?
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, you know, I'm not exactly sure how long it lasts. I'm sure years. But we basically go, like I said, we do it every other year. So it lasts 2, 3, 4, 5 years easy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you ever done anything like that, Mike?
Never have. I've seen it done. And there's a restaurant down in the southern tier of Western New York called Short Track. And it's kind of a tourist location, but they do these buckwheat pancakes, and I think they make their own syrup, or they get it locally made, and it's really good. And you can go and you can get like all you can eat pancakes, but they're these thin, big buckwheat pancakes, so you can mow down like 18 or 20 of these things.
Now, nice. Is it healthy?
Oh yeah, very healthy. You know, it's basically like pure sugar, but you know, you're not getting any of the.
But it's sugar from a tree, isn't it?
Yeah, you're not getting the high, you know, fructose corn syrup or whatever. You're not getting any of that. It's natural, but it's still sugar. Okay, so. Yeah. You
know. I heard on the radio that you can drink as much of this as you want, and it doesn't hurt you at all because it's natural.
Look. Sorry. Well, that's awesome. Well, I guess it's about time for us to wrap this up.
Yeah, I think so. As we mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're outside. It's starting to get dark, isn't it?
Yep, the sun is setting.
And the mosquitoes
are out, yeah.
And the owls are starting to emerge.
Beautiful Catskill evening. Well, Jesse, thank you so much for being on the show. We have one final question we need to ask you. It is, how do you take your coffee?
Ooh, how do I take my coffee? Very interesting question. I pretty much do not. So I've got a lot of energy, and in the morning, I honestly don't need any pick me up at all. Like it's just coffee, like especially straight coffee, so bitter to me. I can't even get it down.
Even with all that maple syrup?
Yeah. Even with all that maple syrup. Yeah, I know. It's amazing. Like I love sugar, so lemonade, soda, all that sort of stuff. But coffee, it's just so bitter. I can handle the Dunkin' Donut, like a Dunkachino or something like that,
nice.
A frap. I can do that. I like the coffee flavor, but for the most part, it's just so bitter. I don't even drink coffee.
Well, on that note,
Jesse, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hi, I'm Jesse Bruby, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and to everyone at WGXC. Thanks.